Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Nerd Out Sanctuary. I'm your host, Michael. And this is episode 17, I believe. I am counting. I don't know if you guys are, but I am. Obviously, it's 17. Okay, I don't know why I was so confused, because I have it written right here on my page, because I have physical copy of my notes. Yeah, that's right. I still have physical copies of my notes now, so that's kind of neat. So we kind of have a little bit of a shorter episode for you today, I think. I'm talking two shows, and guess what, guys? I'm bringing back my top 100 back. I hope you guys enjoyed my listening to my top 10 of 2019. Put a decent amount of work into that list, you know. I saw a lot, but there was definitely some films that I missed. Also, a film that wouldn't have been in my top 10, but I forgot to mention, it would have definitely been in my fringe, it's called The Nightingale. It's from the same same director who did The Babadook, I believe. And that film, it's about like a girl who, like, you know, some tragic things happened to her because, you know, from English people. It's bad. It takes place, I think, in the 1700s or something. I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu. Check it out. It's actually a pretty hard film to watch. It's very dark. It's pretty disturbing as well, but it's a really good film. But I mean, I wouldn't have put it in my top 10 list anyway, but I forgot to mention it in my list discussion, so I kind of felt a little bit guilty not mentioning it because it was really good, and I don't regret watching it. I probably won't watch it again because it's not really a film that you watch again. But if you're thinking it's better than The Babadook, it's not. The Babadook is phenomenal. It's one of the, I think it's a modern horror classic in my opinion. But anyway, hope you guys enjoyed my top 10 of 2019, and I'm going to be going another 5 of my top 100 at the end of this episode. Before we get to that, I'm going to be talking two TV shows that are both currently on Netflix, available to stream on Netflix. One of them is a Netflix original show, and I'm excited to get into those, but I don't know how much I'm going to be really getting into the intricacies of both of them. Kind of hoping this is a little bit quick, but a little bit of an update. I may be going back to work a little bit sooner than I expected. I haven't really been given an actual date yet, but it's kind of unclear if I'm going to be going. I could be working as early as next week. So once I go back, I don't know what my schedule is going to be like. These episodes might be a lot more sporadic and not weekly like I would like it to be. But we'll see. I'm going to try my best to, you know, keep watching things and keep pumping these episodes out to you. And I'll be doing my best, and I hope I can continue doing it weekly, but it'll be more like bi-weekly or tri-weekly. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it depends. I don't know what my schedule is. I don't know how hectic the job's going to be. So we'll see. And who knows? I might still just go back mid to late May still. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't been really received any word, like, officially of when I'm going back. I've just kind of heard rumblings. My state, I live in Pennsylvania. The construction, I think, is opening up May 1st, or I still heard May 8th. So I don't know. I honestly have no idea. So without further ado, let's just get it right into this episode for you guys. Sorry if I'm getting close to the mic. It might be a little bit loud, but you know what? Sorry. You know, it's me. I'm still kind of getting the hang of this stuff. Drinking water. It's kind of a weird taste water because it's been in my thermos, and my thermos had some juice in it. And it's kind of still has a residue of the juice because I'm too lazy to wash it. So I just put water in, and that's the water that's in this cup right here. So, I don't know. Whatever. We're sending it. It's too late now. I'm not going to get up and pause the podcast because I love you guys too much. I care about you guys, and I want to get this content out for you. All right? All right? I'm making sacrifices for you guys. All right? Jesus. Thank me. No, I'm kidding. But I do appreciate any support that you guys give me. If you're listening to, if you're just listening to this podcast on Spotify or any of the audio podcast platforms, know that this is also a YouTube channel, and it would be a great help if you can support me on YouTube. You know, give me a view, give me a like, give me a subscribe, and be heavily appreciated. I'd really appreciate it. If you're just watching on YouTube, I would suggest that you check out if you just want to listen to the show. This is just a podcast, so it's primarily meant to be listened to, and that it's available on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify, the three major podcast platforms. So that's where you can get me. But I mean, if you're I appreciate you supporting me on YouTube as well. So yeah, thank you guys. I appreciate all you guys. Give me a comment. I'll respond to you. I will respond to you. Don't think I won't. I will, damn it. But yeah. So sometimes YouTube's hasn't been really showing up comments. Like it's like been showing like in my notifications that someone commented on my video, but like when I go into the video and view the comments, like it's not there. It's weird. I have to figure out some YouTube stuff. So if I don't comment, like reply to your comment, I'm sorry. I think it's just you. Blame it on YouTube. Don't blame it on me. I'm going to shift the blame to YouTube. But anyway, so let's just get into it. So my first TV show that I'm going to be talking about today, guys, we're talking about Waco, that Waco show that's on Netflix. If you're unfamiliar with the show, it's based off of the true life story of the Waco incident, where down in Waco, Texas, there was this cult compound. They were known as the Branch Davidians, led by this guy named David. And the ATF shows up because they were kind of running sort of like an illegal gun operation, whether they're, you know, in possession of illegal guns, or I think they were just modifying guns without a permit. It's kind of, I'm not incredibly sure. I was kind of trying to read up on this situation, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But yeah, the ATF was there, and shit kind of goes down, and then the FBI gets involved, and it's this big standoff. And it's a pretty well-known, true crime, true story type of standoff between the government and, like, you know, a private religious cult, basically. So this is, it's a very interesting story. I recommend watching documentaries about it and, like, true things. But let's get into the actual show itself. Really loaded cast. Like, I'm talking, like, some major players here. Michael Shannon, I mean, let me tell you. Michael Shannon is one of my favorite actors, like, ever. And he's rarely in things. And whenever he is, he's quite fucking phenomenal in them. And he's the same. He's phenomenal here. And I just love, I wish all these actors were in more things. They're a bunch of actors, bunch of character actors that really aren't in a lot, but whenever they are, you're like, oh man, I love you, man. Like, you're great. Why aren't you in more shit? Michael Shannon is definitely one of those. He plays Gary Nesner, an FBI, a negotiator, who gets involved with the whole standoff. Taylor Kitsch, if you're unfamiliar with him, he played Tim Riggins in Friday Night Lights. He was also in The Lone Survivor. I would argue he's probably the only good thing in the second season of True Detective, other than Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell is also really good in that show as well, but that season kind of sucked, in my opinion. Taylor Kitsch was probably one of the few bright spots of it. And then there's a lot of other, like, unfamiliar names. There's a Julia Gardner. She's, if you know her from, she plays Ruth in Ozark. She's phenomenal. She's a minor role in this when her career was starting to get get going a little bit, getting a little bit more roles. She got this one, and she's really good here. Rory Culkin is in this as well in a minor role. I mean, there's a lot of recognizable faces that you're like, oh, I know you. So not a lot of recognizable names, but recognizable faces. But yeah, the performances, everyone brings it, and I will probably say now the acting is definitely the best part of the show. But we'll get into that a little bit. So let's kind of get into the things that the show does really right. Like I said, the acting and the performances are top notch. Everyone brings it. Everyone is amazing. The directing is generally pretty good, but I'll kind of get in, that kind of leads a little bit into my criticism a little bit. It kind of brings out a little bit of my problems with the show. But, like, the show is very, very well made. It's incredibly engaging. The characters are amazing. The writing is very amazing. Everything about the show is great as a show. But the problem with a show like this, and kind of, this is not very specific to this show. It's specific to shows like this that kind of follow a true story, true crime narrative, that, like, a situation that actually happened. And obviously they have to take some creative liberties, and you know, some things kind of get lost in translation, because the main goal behind a show like this is to entertain you. You know, it's not like a documentary where its primary reason for being made is to inform. You know, this is not meant to inform you. It's meant to entertain you. So it kind of leads into a little bit of that territory, kind of being a little bit one-sided, because that's kind of how stories work. There always has to be some antagonist, some bad guy that you kind of have to root against. There has to be something to root against, and there has to be something to root for. And I think in stories such as this one in Waco, there really isn't a particular bad guy. And honestly, I think the show kind of makes David, the cult leader, out to be a little bit more of a good person than he really was in real life. I read somewhere where some children that actually got out of the cult were testified against David, saying that he actually molested them when they were like 10. It's kind of easy to believe, knowing, because, I mean, even in the documentary and in real life, David married, like, he had like 13 wives. Like, all the men were celibate in the Branch Davidians, and basically David married all of their wives and had kids with all of their wives. So it's kind of crazy. Like, no man and no one can have sex but David and all the women, all of his wives. And that's it. So the guy was kind of very manipulative. I mean, most cult leaders are. And he was kind of a shitty dude. Like, I mean, they definitely play on that a little bit in the show, but not as much as I think they probably should have. Because you did feel bad for David a couple of times in the show, and when I was like, look, that's me being ignorant, going into it ignorant, and then after the show, I decided to look into it a little bit more. I was just like, oh, David was kind of a piece of shit. They kind of really, like, when you're finished watching the show, you, like, the clear bad guys are the FBI and the ATF, because they're pretty much just there to kind of, for their own benefit. You know, the ATF kind of wanted some big bad guy to portray their usefulness, because the ATF was kind of worrying about their funding being cut and basically all their jobs being in jeopardy, and they kind of wanted to show, you know, the government and, you know, America, like, why they're needed. That's why that's why Waco became such a big thing, because it was so televised, and it was kind of became such a big issue. So, and also, yes, the FBI is definitely not blameless in this, and the ATF is not blameless in this. I mean, there's definitely been stories told that whether the ATF shot first, I mean, because there was a gunfight that ensued when this ATF raid happened, and a lot of people died on both sides. So, I mean, that kind of really raised the stakes here and made a lot of people act very emotionally, including the ATF and the FBI, because the FBI kind of used a little bit of excessive force. They bring in tanks. If you know anything about the true story, I'm going to spoil it. They do use tear gas, and tear gas is known to be flammable, and apparently the FBI also used flashbangs when they used tear gas, so that wasn't really fucking smart, FBI. I don't know. There had to have been someone being like, yeah, this is probably not a good idea, because it's pretty fucking flammable. And it's also like, you're punishing and you're killing the people who are part of the Branch Davidians, not just David. You know, there's a lot of people, I mean, you're punishing for doing what? Being ignorant and being naive and being, you know, easily, you know, influenced by this cult leader. I mean, they didn't do anything else other than that. You know, there's innocent women and children in there, and they fucking died. So there's no blameless party here, and I think they kind of put a lot of the blame on the FBI. I mean, granted, they do a decent enough job kind of giving their side of the story and then also giving David's side of the story, but I think they kind of, I don't know, there is definitely some bias there. But I mean, I don't know. You don't really know what's right, and that's kind of my problems with shows and movies like this. Like, they clearly have to take a side, they have to take a stance, or it's just not going to be interesting narratively and thematically. I mean, that's what documentaries are for. Documentaries are there to inform you and not be biased. That's a sign of being a good documentary. But I mean, again, with a show like this, it has to kind of take a stand. There has to be a good guy or a bad guy to mainly make it interesting. I mean, it's possible that you can, you know, not take a stand. I mean, it's possible, and it'd still be entertaining. But still... I don't know. It's hard to do that when you're trying to make something very entertaining and engaging and not really have a particularly bad guy and good guy. So it's still worth a watch, and it's still very interesting. It's still very engaging. I just, you know, encourage you guys to go in there with a little bit of a skeptical mind and, you know, try to not be biased and try not to let it influence you either one way or the other. I mean, both sides do some pretty negligent things, and, yeah, so, and you're still allowed to have an opinion. I mean, you can still make up your own mind, so, and I don't think the show is real blatant. Like, it's very in-your-face what position they hold, so I think it's still worth a watch, and I still think it's an incredible, a really well-made miniseries, and it's worth your watch, especially for the actors and the performances. I mean, a lot of these actors aren't in a lot, and they all do a fantastic job here, and their performances are they should be seen, so, by an audience. But yeah, that's Waco. I definitely recommend it if you're kind of into these like true life, true crime type of, you know, movies or TV shows. If you're into those like the informative documentaries, it's definitely a very interesting watch. I would definitely recommend it if you're into that type of thing. So yeah, Waco, watch it or not. It is what it is. You know, it's kind of one of those things where it's just like, eh, you can pass on it. And I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's not an absolute must-see. It's not like Ozark, where you're just like, you fucking need to watch it. It's not Ozark or Breaking Bad or, you know, whatever. Like, that is, you know, must-watch TV. It's not really that quality, mainly because it's a true story. But, yeah. You know, it's a very interesting situation, and it's interesting to, you know, follow and see what happens and some the different perspectives and the characters involved and the stories involved. So yeah, it's a good watch. All right, let's move on finally, since I clearly didn't know how to end that segment. But yeah, I'm gonna take a drink of my water, my weirdly flavored water. I mean, it doesn't taste bad. It's just, you know, it doesn't really taste like water, but whatever. I'm a weirdo. I'm sorry. But the next show is actually a Netflix original. It's called I Am Not Okay With This. Season 1 of I Am Not Okay With This. Very interesting show. If you're I'm sure a lot of you are unfamiliar with this one, because I was pretty much unfamiliar with this one. I just saw it on Netflix. I was like, oh, chick from It and kid from It, the movies. So if you're unfamiliar with this, it follows a character named Sydney. She's a teenager. I'm pretty sure she's, I think, 17, but she's in high school. Her family has moved around, but her father recently killed himself, and she's dealing with a lot. I mean, obviously, a lot of girls that age deal with a lot, but Sydney uniquely is dealing with, she actually has superpowers, like telekinetic abilities, and that's kind of where we kind of start out a little bit, her trying to like figure out if she has superpowers or not, and dealing with just normal high school girl things, with, you know, also dealing with, you know, a hard family life, her dad being recently deceased, recently killed himself, and, you know, dealing with a mother who's kind of having a hard time and trying to keep the family together, and, you know, her just trying to keep her own psyche together and adding, you know, superpowers to all this. Really complicates things, but yeah, so that's what the show's about. It stars, like I said, two child actors. Well, they're not really children, they're teenage actors, from the It movie. You have Sophia Lillis, she plays Sydney, and Wyatt Olef, I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his name. He plays Stanley. Funny enough, he actually plays Stan in It too, which I thought was kind of funny. But the one major thing about the show is both of them are incredibly good. It's kind of crazy. It's how good their performances are and how well they both do. I was incredibly invested in both of their characters and their storylines. That's kind of the main draw to this show. I mean, everyone else is kind of like, okay. I mean, whatever. You're kind of likable or you're kind of hateable, you know, depending on what character is what. But those two were pretty complicated and very interesting characters, and I really liked their relationship with one another. I thought that was really cool. But, you know, it follows that typical run-of-the-mill coming-of-age story. It still deals with, you know, those cliches a bit, but it just kind of throws in this whole, like, superpower that kind of muddies all those, you know, cliches up a little bit. It is based off of a comic book of similar name written by, I think, a man named Charles Forsman. So, yeah, I've never heard of the comic, but, you know, I thought this was pretty interesting. Maybe I might think about it now to see what happens next, because I don't know if it teases a second season. It definitely, I hope, I don't know if they've confirmed they're going to make a second season, because I don't know how many people watch this one, but I recommend this one. I definitely recommend if what I described and if like you watch a trailer and you're like, oh, that looks interesting, definitely watch it. Definitely check this one out, because I'm really glad that I decided to check this one out. It's actually a very short watch. There's 7 episodes and every episode's around 20 minutes long. I think maybe the last episode might be a little bit longer, maybe be a half an hour, but it's really quick. I mean, I watched it in one night, so it was really quick. It includes a narration. The main character, Sydney, she narrates the whole thing, which I thought was really cool. Sometimes narrations can be a little bit off-putting and weird, and sometimes it's just like deals random exposition that's kind of unnecessary that I can just watch for myself, but I think it added a lot more to the show. A show like this doesn't really work without kind of getting into the head of our main character, because, I mean, she's kind of silent. She's, you know, the quiet type of kid, quiet, weird kid. Obviously, you're going to be that way if your father kills himself and you're dealing with superpowers with that. So, yeah. But, I mean, it definitely comes into play at the very end of the show, and you'll see how. It provided some comedic elements, definitely some... Again, makes our character a lot more complicated and a lot more interesting, and I thought it was a good way. I don't know. I'm familiar with the comic, so I don't know if that really happens in the comic, like a sort of narration by the main character, if that's like stays true to the actual, you know, source material. But yeah, I thought it was a really cool touch. It definitely worked here. Like I said, the two performances were spectacular. It's very surprising, because it kind of reminded me in Stranger Things in that way. Like these like sort of teenage actors really kind of doing really well, you know, leading a show, you know, when it could go really either way. I mean, especially with these like teenage / kid actors, A lot of times it can get really, they can be really unintentionally really annoying and just kind of be really poor characters. But I think the creators and the actors do a phenomenal job of making these characters likable and believable and, you know, complicated characters, and not just like, oh, dealing with fucking random school problems, because, yeah, you know, sometimes it can get a little bit like, okay, melodramatic and this is kind of just stupid. But yeah, not here. A weird criticism I have of the show is I couldn't pinpoint at like what time period this is set in. Like it kind of has this weird 70s 80s feel to it. Like this like retro type of like classic feel, kind of like Stranger Things a little bit, but not as like in your face as Stranger Things. I also saw a character that had a shirt that said 2009 on it. But then I read something somewhere online that it takes place in the 90s. So it's like, what time period is this set in? I don't really understand. But, I mean, it's not really that important to the show. I mean, it's still very interesting. I think just the way the series is filmed and sort of the sort like nostalgic elements to it kind of definitely pulling. It's definitely relatable to me. So Yeah, I still really enjoyed it. Yeah, so the time period doesn't really matter too much. It's like I said, it definitely sets up a second season. So if it does, I hope they do one, because I'll definitely be here for it. But I don't know. I don't know how many people watch it. I don't know how big this is. But yeah, I definitely recommend checking this one out, because I'm kind of need to see a second season, because it ends on a big cliffhanger, and I'm like, what happens now? So yeah, check this one out if you're interested. If I, you know, whatever I said makes you interested in it, it's a quality watch. So yeah, there's that. Those are my two shows. How are we on time here? I think we're at like around 25 minutes. Yep, 25 minutes. So wow, we're fucking moving. We're moving along, guys. This might be a really quick episode, but hey, you know, quickie's not, it's not a bad thing. But let's get into the big thing here. We're going back to my top 100, and I'm looking at my next five. There's definitely big run on comedies here. I mean, I think if you'll tell by my top 100, comedy, like the comedy genre, is not my favorite genre. It is kind of hard to make me laugh out loud a little bit with movies. So they kind of tend to be not my favorite. But I still love comedies. Like, they're still there. They're still in my top 100. And here's pretty much, every single one of these films have at least a comedic element to them. And some of them are just full-blown comedies. But anyway, before I get started running down my next five, I just kind of want to put a disclaimer. All these films have the movie magic. If you're familiar with my channel, I give films, whether it has the Mikey's movie magic or not, whether I really enjoy it or not. But I kind of reserve the movie magic rating for like special films, films that I really enjoy that I will revisit. And all these films have that. I mean, it's my top 100, so it's kind of self-explanatory. Also, I'm not going to get a real in-depth review of every single one of these films, because that would just take all fucking day. And this is also my opinion. This is not objective fact that these are the top 100 films of all time in this order. These are just my personal favorite 100 films of all time. It was just my random movie nerd one night decides to make a fucking top 100 list of his favorite films. And it has changed throughout the years. Films have been bumped out. Some films have been put in. Some films have been moved around. Usually once we get past 50, it kind of gets into that untouchable range where it's like they're pretty much kind of set in stone. But like until we get to them, these can kind of rise and fall over time. I don't know. Who knows? This is my list. I can do whatever the fuck I want with them, all right? So if you don't like it, I don't give a shit. You know, you're here, all right? Thank you for watching, though. I do appreciate you. And if you agree or disagree with me, comment. I'll reply to you. I would love to have a discussion with you guys. But anyway, let's just get into it. Number 80, we got The Princess Bride. That's right, a very classic film. And maybe a lot of people probably would expect me to have this higher. I mean, I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and the tomato meter is 97%, which is ridiculous. But I don't disagree with it. It is hilarious. I love The Princess Bride. It is a phenomenal film. My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die. I mean, come on now. I mean, let's all be honest. This film is amazing. Robin Wright is in it. I mean, she's a princess. She plays Princess Buttercup. Mandy Patinkin. I mean, come on now. Mandy Patinkin is Inigo Montoya. Let's come on. What was the Six Finger Man, I think. Yeah, that guy. I mean, the whole film is just hilarious, and it's just such a great time. It's another one of those films that I can just describe as just like, it's just a really great time at the movies, and it's just so enjoyable, and it's so rewatchable, and there's a reason why it's a classic, and it's just like, it has this, I don't know, like weird, smaller film feel to it that just like gives it so much personality, and there's so many iconic lines in it, and it's so many iconic characters. I mean, just talking like I just talked about Inigo Montoya and that line that I just, you know, awfully just butchered, probably. But yeah, it's a great film, and if you have not seen A Princess Bride, definitely watch it. You won't regret it. I guarantee that. I guarantee you won't regret it. So, yeah, moving on to another comedy, number 79, Office Space. I mean, who doesn't love Office Space? I mean, if you can't empathize with the plight of an office cubicle worker, I mean, you haven't worked an office job before. And I've worked in an office. It wasn't specifically an office job, but I've worked in an office and worked in a cubicle for a period of time, like early in my civil engineering career. And yeah, it can really get to you a little bit. And this film became a lot more relatable to me with time and like revisiting it. It's so hilarious. You took my stapler. It's my stapler. I could just set the old building on fire. I mean, come on, Milton, right? It's Milton, right? Hold on, I need to make sure. Yeah. No. Okay. Never mind. Yeah, Milton. All right. But yeah, Ron Livingston, Jennifer Aniston is in it, which is hilarious. I mean, come on. That iconic meme, like, it'd be great if you could come in on Saturday. That would be great. Like, that's an iconic meme. I mean, that's from this. I mean, the whole printer bashing with a baseball bat. Die, motherfucker, die, motherfucker, die. Damn, feels good to be a gangster. Let that song is playing. It's perfect. It's perfect. The film is great. It's so topical. It's timeless. Everyone can relate to this because mostly everyone has worked in an office before. But yeah, I definitely think you kind of have to be an adult and kind of be in the whole, like, experience the whole monotony of like doing an office job and the whole like life behind that and just repeating the same process over and over again. Like, you definitely kind of have to experience that to really fully appreciate this one. But the film is still hilarious, and I still think anyone can enjoy it. So Office Space, number 79. All right, so moving on to number 78, yet another comedy, classic one. We have Caddyshack. I mean, what can I say about Caddyshack that isn't, like, everyone's seen it, everyone knows about Caddyshack. I mean, come on, Chevy Chase, Ronnie Dangerfield, Bill Murray, I mean, classic comedic actors, iconic comedic actors, and iconic comedic performances. I mean, I'm talking, holy shit, this film is hilarious. It is too funny. It's almost too funny. I mean, fun fact, Bill Murray and Chevy Chase actually legitimately hate each other, and I'm pretty sure they've got into a couple fights while on this set, and I'm pretty sure that feud's still going on to this day. So a little fun fact behind the scenes thing about it. I'm looking at the Rotten Tomatoes. It actually only has a 74 on Rotten Tomatoes. I wonder why. Audience score is much higher with an 87%, but, you know, fucking critics. They don't know shit. We don't know shit. The critics don't know what the audience likes. Damn it. That's what, I don't know. I bring up audience, I mean, the tomato meter scores, Rotten Tomato scores, because I think it's interesting to look at. Even though I don't reference it at all, like, determining what I want to watch. So, yeah. That's why I just take a Rotten Tomato scores with a grain of salt. But yeah, the Caddyshack, I don't really want to talk too much about it because it's just an iconic comedy and it's hilarious. And yeah, watch it if you haven't. Especially if you've worked, if you're a fan of The Golf Game or if you've worked at a caddy before, I'm sure this film is even higher on your list if you have one. So yeah, Caddyshack is the best. So moving on, number 77, we have Fargo. We got Fargo. That's right. I reviewed the actual TV show Fargo, I think, on one of my early episodes. I don't have it on YouTube, but it's on audio platform, so check it out. The show is actually pretty great, but this is where it started, back in 1996, the year I was born, fun fact. But yeah, Fargo, classic Coen Brothers film. I mean, I'm talking hilarious, very dramatic, and also you see why, like, how situations can really escalate, and just like the one wrong decision can really fuck shit up for everyone, and you see just how a situation can spiral out of control, and how, like, engaging that can be, and how interesting it can be, and just the setting of Fargo. I think it's North Dakota, right? Fargo, North Dakota. You think it's Minnesota, but I'm pretty sure it's North Dakota. But yeah, I mean, we're talking amazing performances by Frances McDormand, Steve Buscemi, William H. Macy. I mean, come on, William H. Macy is the shit, and he's one of those actors that's not in enough. But yeah, he's getting older, a little bit older now. I mean, all these actors are getting a little bit older now. But I mean, all three of them, Frances McDormand, Steve Buscemi, and William H. Macy, are all some of, like, the best actors working ever. And they just haven't really been in a lot that you would want them to be, because they're so good. Especially, so if you haven't checked out Fargo, it's another one of those films where you won't regret watching it, because it's just so amazing. You know, it's kind of... Especially if you like, if you saw Parasite this year, like a little bit more modern film, and it won Best Picture. But I think Parasite is like, it's like the Korean, it's almost like the Korean, foreign Korean version of Fargo. You know, obviously not a same setting at all, but like the story is kind of similar. You know, that like they're all kind of doing, like, some people are doing some shady shit, but you kind of understand a little bit why they're doing it. But, like, you still don't agree with it. It's still not right. And, like, you know, maybe they trip up along the way, or they make one wrong decision, and that one wrong decision just, like, fucks everything up, and everything just goes to shit after. So, yeah, Fargo's classic. It's amazing. It's number 77. So now moving on to number 76. We got Snatch. That's right, Snatch. Director, here, hold on real quick, Guy Ritchie. Guy Ritchie, written by Guy Ritchie and directed by him. Hilarious film. And it's not specifically a comedy. Both Fargo and this one are kind of similar. They're not specifically comedies, but they have so many comedic elements working for them, working for the films, and they just make the film so hilarious. That, like, dark humor, that morbid humor, comedic elements to it are just hilarious, and it really hits on my sense of humor. I have a pretty dark, fucked up sense of humor, so obviously I would love Fargo and Snatch, and Snatch is hilarious. Some things that I've been forgetting, neglecting to talk about when I'm talking about these films is whether they're going to be rising or falling in my list, and I think this one out of this five probably has the most chance to actually fall, like get high, have a higher number in my top 100. I would say probably the other four are pretty set in stone. I don't think they're going to be going anywhere, but this one, I don't know. This one has a lot of rewatchability, and it will definitely be in my top 100 because I love it so much. I mean, I just love Jason Statham in it, and I also just love Brad Pitt in this one. Brad Pitt is hilarious. Want to go buy a caravan? Like, I mean, how do you, like, you can't even understand him, and it's hilarious, and it just adds so much. It's definitely a comedic performance, but it's, you know, Brad Pitt's great in it. But also, those ladies out there, you might also like Brad Pitt's performance in this one a little bit. So, yeah. Great film. Hilarious. Pretty intense film as well. Very hectic. I mean, if you've ever watched a Guy Ritchie film, you kind of understand what I'm talking about. Fast, quick-witted, very fast-paced film. A lot of shit happens at once in this film. A lot of shit's happening simultaneously. A lot of characters, a lot of different personalities, very crazy, very eccentric type of high octane type of film, but very good. I think this is probably Guy Ritchie's best film. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't really, spoiler alert, I don't have any other Guy Ritchie films in my top 100. This is obviously the only one. I think this is probably, yeah, this is definitely my favorite, and probably, I don't know, the only Guy Ritchie film that I actually love is Snatch. So if you haven't checked Snatch out, I would definitely check this one out. This one's hilarious and great. Probably does not have any potential to rise. I don't think any of these films really have a potential to rise because a lot of them are comedies. Maybe Fargo has a chance to rise because that film is just really classic and amazing for me. I love Fargo. Plus, the cold weather and the snow definitely does something. I like cold weather. I prefer it to warm weather. I'm a weird guy like that. I mean, come on now. I'm a weird dude. I'm not the most normal. I mean, this is Nerd Out Sanctuary. A host of this show is probably not going to be the most normal guy in the world. But, you know, hey, hopefully it makes a little bit more entertaining for you. But yeah, so that's it, guys. That's my next 80 and next 5 of my top 100, number 80 through 76. I'm going to be continuing to do this through my episodes if I don't have enough to talk about, which is kind of true because there's a lot of shit that I need to watch and get out to you guys. So, yeah, I'm going to try to stay up to date. I think I'm going to be able to get another episode out before I go back to work, so we'll see about that, but I don't really know. I might not. So there might be a pretty big gap between this episode and the next, but you know, I'm going to try. I love doing this and I appreciate all you guys you know, tuning in, and if you're familiar with Nerd Out Sanctuary, I like to get an episodic message at the end of every one of my episodes, and that it's okay to not be okay. I know it's kind of hard to give this message at a time like this with all this COVID-19 stuff happening and, you know, people not working and not making money and like having hard times financially, and, you know, people are also dying, and it's scary. It's some scary shit. You know, it's definitely been real for me and my family and my mom, you know, especially. And yeah, and I'm going to be going back to work, and that's kind of a little bit scary in itself, but I'm, you know, they obviously gave us health and safety plans to, you know, follow, hopefully, and hopefully we won't have any problems when we go back. But, you know, it's still, you know, mentally, this can definitely take a toll on you, especially if you're, you know, cooped up. You know, I mean, a guy like me who's more introverted, I'm kind of okay with it. But I mean, there's a lot of people that aren't, and it's, you know, it's okay to not be. And just know that hopefully, like, tomorrow will hopefully be better. Tomorrow's not going to be today. If today is, you know, if today's the worst day of your life, tomorrow most likely won't be the worst day of your life. Tomorrow will likely be better. I mean, if it's so bad, the only way it can go is up. So, but, you know, joking aside, you know, I've had a lot of bad days in my life, and there's been a lot of times where I thought it wasn't going to get better, and, you know, well, people told me that it was, and you know what, it has gotten better, you know, at least for me mentally, it has been, so, you know, I like to say, just coming from experience, it does get better, and, you know, shit can be really hard, and shit can be really awful, and you know, I don't really need to tell you, life is unfair, but, you know, just know that, you know, I'm here. You know, if you watch my podcast, hopefully, you know, can kind of take you out, you know, of your world a little bit, and hopefully I can give you some recommendations on how to actually get in a little bit of an escape to 2 to 3 hours here and there, you know, every night, to just, you know, escape into a world. So yeah, guys, That's it for my episode. Hopefully I can get another one out to you before I go back to work. So before I, you know, start having no time to actually do this. But yeah, I'm going to continue to doing this even if I'm working. They're just going to be a little bit more sporadic. So yeah, guys, next episode I'm going to be talking Afterlife Season 2 and another film that Ricky Gervais is in, because I've watched both Afterlife Season 2. And this other film that he's in that's on Netflix. And I'll probably run through another 5 of my top 100. But yeah, so that's the next episode. I don't know when that's going to be coming out. Or, you know, who knows? I'll try to get it out and try to make it before I go back to work, like I said. But with that, that's kind of the episode, guys. And I appreciate all you guys checking this out. This is Nerd Out Sanctuary. I'm Michael. I'm available here on YouTube, here on, you know, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play as just an audio podcast, and then here on YouTube as a video podcast as well. So yeah, everywhere. Hopefully you guys enjoy this episode, and stick around for my next one. I appreciate all you guys. If you subscribe, give me a like, you know, give me a review on iTunes or whatever. I'd appreciate all the feedback, and you know, you guys are the best. So yeah, that's it, guys. This has been fun. That's episode 17. Bye.